Hello, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to another edition of the Daily Fringe Show. A special edition taking place on a Friday because there is an interesting development in the news that we want to talk about. To discuss this development, which we will get to shortly, I'm joined by Mr. Terence Corrigan, Project Manager, the Institute for Race Relations. Terence, how are you this fine Friday morning?
Good, Nick. How are you?
I'm pretty good. And also, we are joined by Mr. Herman Pretorius. Herman, how are you?
Hi, Nick. Hi, Terence. I must say, it's when someone told me we need to speak about something Tito Mboweni said, I thought, I don't have strong opinions on garlic or sardines.
Yes, unfortunately, it seems that the finance minister is known better for his cooking these days than his sound financial policy. But he has said something quite interesting in the media. So, of course, one of the great signature an important piece of legislation that the government is pushing through at the moment, which will have disastrous consequences for the country, is an amendment to the Constitution and an expropriation bill in sort of conjunction with that, which will effectively destroy property rights in South Africa. Tito Mboweni, answering a parliamentary question, said that National Treasury has not conducted formal research on the impacts of land expropriation without compensation or undertake a risk assessment of the impact on the economy. He went on to say, however, to the extent that land expropriation without compensation were to generate policy uncertainty, it would have harmful effects on the economy. Several studies have looked at the impact of policy uncertainty on the South African economy. For example, policy uncertainty diminishes the responsiveness of exports to change in the real exchange rate, as well as introducing harmful short and long run level effects on export performance. So this is a very cagey piece of critique. I think you can read this. I think we talked about this a little bit yesterday on the show. You can read this in a couple of different ways. But Terence, let me start with you. What should we make of what the Minister of Finance is saying here? And is this a setback for expropriation without compensation?
It's an interesting development in that he is conceding that there are risks. Now, this is something that we haven't seen a great deal of. Over time, we've had the government or government representatives punting this idea as being the opening the door to the veritable Garden of Eden, as President Ramaphosa put it, a theologically ignorant statement, but nonetheless, I think one understands the import of that. That this is going to spur all sorts of economic growth and it's going to be generally wonderful for the country. This is a rare case of a government minister being willing to say that this could actually be a problem. So, in that sense, it does sort of step outside the narrative, and it's to be welcomed that is recognized. On the other hand, the idiom in which it's phrased is something that we've come to expect. Policy uncertainty is one thing that the government will concede is a break on economic performance. And I think this is sort of because it reduces our problems to some sort of no fault, free floating situation that perhaps comes from a lot of debate. That it's something that ultimately we can resolve. It's not structural. It's not ideological. It doesn't really require any huge commitment to deal with. Merely to be firm on the direction, and coming out of that, the response is normally it doesn't really matter what our policies are as long as people know what they are. Now, that is, I think, an enormous non sequitur. One can be very sure of the direction of policy and just regard it as very bad policy, and therefore one is very sure that one does not want to want to invest. So what I'm seeing here is that within this framework, there does seem to be some sort of voice that is at least wary of the of what expropriation without compensation could unleash.
So Herman, I'm going to move to you now. Firstly, what do you think of the political implications of this? Does it show that the tide is perhaps turning in the battle of ideas? And the second question is, you and I were talking just before the show about legislating uncertainty. Could you just explain those two ideas?
Yeah, so let me come to the second point first. Tito Mboweni, I think, is, if cabinet has good guys in it, Tito Mboweni is probably one of them. Probably one of him. I can't think of any real, perhaps Naledi Pandor isn't too bad either. You know, in terms of integrity, goodness knows what our foreign policy is, but, you know, at least she doesn't seem actively to be making people poor. Which is mostly what the rest of the cabinet is really, really good at doing. But Tito Mboweni is as close to a decent, rational, non-ideologically intoxicated politician as we can get in cabinet. So it's not nothing that he is stepping up to say this. But he's giving us and proponents of secure property rights a bit of an opportunity here. I don't think through design, but accidentally, he gives us the opportunity to latch onto this point of uncertainty. Because he is right, and I absolutely agree with Terence, if you blame stuff to policy uncertainty, it's sort of no one is really to blame. It's just we have too many ideas. But the point of a usefulness that we can exploit comes from the fact that if you take the proposed amendments to Section 25 and you take the expropriation bill, they essentially create a legislated form of policy uncertainty because the policy of property rights becomes significantly undermined. It's no longer clear whose property rights are respected and to what extent. And you also, as an individual, can't know whether you might become the target of an effort from the state side to lose your property. So it's a policy, it's perhaps not policy uncertainty, but it is a policy of uncertainty. Because it was very, very interesting to see in Business Tech, a publication I usually have quite a lot of time for as it goes, but they talk about land expropriation in the piece reporting on Tito Mboweni's remarks, but it's not just land expropriation. This is why we must continue making this point that land expropriation is not the issue. Property rights, expropriation broadly, is the issue because Section 25 of the Constitution makes it explicit, as does the proposed alternative expropriation legislation pushed by Patricia de Lille. Property considered in those pieces of legislation, subject to possible expropriation without compensation, not limited to land. In fact, the expropriation bill explicitly points, has phraseology like, in cases where property is not land. So it explicitly envisions a situation where all property rights are at risk. And that's where the point of uncertainty is so supercharged. Every single piece of property rights, whether it's intellectual, whether it's my owning my spectacles, whether it's when Pitt owning his farm, whether it's a business owner, all concept of private ownerships are cast into doubt. And if that's not uncertainty, I don't know what is. The first question I have forgotten.
It was, do you think this is a setback for...
Yes. Good.
I mean, it's our compensation.
It can be. It can be if we take this opportunity to drive a wedge, if a wedge is to be driven between some in the ANC, between the Minister of Finance and Cabinet, and the rest of Cabinet. But it also might not be. It is really up to us to make something of this. Will it become a setback? Will we grasp this opportunity? Will the proponents of property rights be able to muster enough gusto in the media and in private to make this a setback? Or will this just be a little remark along this remark on the side, something falling out of the bus, inevitably heading towards the cliff of the destruction of property rights?
Right. So sort of on that point, Terence, there's I think a number of ways you can look at this politically. One of them is to say that this is about as critical as someone, you know, who is right in the highest parts of government can be of government and still keep his job. And that Tito Mboweni is now perhaps testing the waters for criticism, for rolling back EWC or maybe limiting it in some significant way. The other argument is that Tito Mboweni provides such a large amount of credibility to the government that he's essentially unfireable. And by not taking a harder stance and perhaps more aggressively condemning EWC, then he's really failing in his duty here. What do you make of that, Terence?
My understanding is that the ANC does value its collective voice, so I think that he does face some very real challenges. I think he possibly believes that he is able to provide some sort of stability and some sort of, as you say, credibility to the government. He has not been supported by President Ramaphosa at all. You know, if I think back to the presidencies of Mr. Mandela and Mr. Mbeki, they both stood very firmly behind their finance ministers, even when those decisions were unpopular. Mr. Ramaphosa, I just don't think has any real intention of doing that. So, but you know, I also don't think one should lose sight of the fact that Tito Mboweni has been in the highest flights of government since 1994. He was the governor of the Reserve Bank. I think that he has a perspective on South Africa's circumstances and its prospects that very few people have, and I think that he is generally committed to not seeing the country fall. On the other hand, there is only so much that one person or one department can do, and so he probably has to choose his words very carefully. You know, and if I may just pick up on the question of certainty, towards the end of last year, Minister De Lille wrote an article was published under her name, talking about how the expropriation bill would, you guessed it, provide certainty, because it was going to show everybody, you know, when the government could come and grab your stuff. Now, up to a point, perhaps, although let's bear in mind that legislation typically outlines technical details. So yes, there is a process. There is a process outlined, and as I think we've argued convincingly, the process is skewed in favor of the state. But the interesting thing was that she kept on saying it's constitutionally compliant. It's constitutionally compliant. Yet, in the background was the constitutional amendment, and earlier that same year, the ANC had indicated that it wanted the constitutional amendment revised to remove or to marginalize the role of the courts, which now seems to be back on the table if one looks at comments that have been made to the committee. So, you know, are we even that much closer to knowing knowing what that legislation is going to look like? You know, run into a situation where the expropriation bill, in according to certain roles to the courts, now becomes unconstitutional and has to be expanded, or its remit has to be expanded. So no, I don't think that we're anywhere near policy certainty. And I'll go one step further than that. I don't think policy certainty is really possible with the within the ideological and the political framework that our government functions in. There always seems to be another a bridgehead to be established leading to another beach to be taken. If one looks back at the mining charter, well, you know, mining charter one was livable. Then mining charter two, mining charter three, the Employment Equity Act. Well, now we're facing some fairly dramatic. We've gone from a situation where, there would be solemn pledges that this is not about quotas. Now we're moving into something which I think cannot be described anything other than quotas. The Firearms Control Act. We've gone from saying, there are legitimate purposes, to a new draft bill that says defending yourself is not a legitimate purpose. We've got we've gone from an orientation that was very much about, or at least in theory, about establishing South Africa as an open economy and, you know, a trade power, to what is, what looks very much to me like a siege economy, localization. Just the other day, there was a kerfuffle where the medical aides were, you know, freaked out about the fact that it looks like the reserves are now being earmarked for the NHI. Well, this has been coming, you know. Didn't you know? I have to marvel at the naivete of seeing, you know, how else did we expect this thing to work? But yeah, you know, this is it's one thing after another. Push for a bit for some give. There's give and take, and then 5 years down the line, we can look at we can look at changing the demands. I mean, I would say those people invested in private schools, for instance, might want to start thinking about this.
Mm-hmm. That's a very good point. Herman, any more thoughts on this?
Yeah, I must say, I'm very glad that Terence mentions the medical aid schemes and so on, suddenly realizing that ideology matters and that you can't, what's the great, if you're watching this at home and you have not seen the Gary Oldman Winston Churchill film of 2017, I think, Darkest Hour. Go watch it. It's brilliant. It's the best. It's really one of the two best Churchill films out there. And don't get Terence and myself started on films. But there's this wonderful moment when Lord Halifax who was Foreign Secretary at the time, was trying to convince Churchill to negotiate with Hitler. And then Churchill, the character of Churchill, has this outburst. You cannot negotiate. When will the lesson be learned that you cannot negotiate with a tiger when your head is in its mouth? And that's very similar to the sort of situation we face here in South Africa. Slowly but surely, you can take this back to water rights, mineral rights, the now NHI, EWC. You can see ideologically over the last decade and a half or so, how the mouth of the tiger is opening wider and wider and wider, and the South African population is just proceeding into that those jaws, the whole time thinking that they can negotiate with a tiger. And I was very intrigued by the fact that the Banking Association of South Africa, BASA, has now said that, you know, the policy poses a significant risk to the banking sector. And from my time at IRR campaigns, that's music to my ears. We spent months last year trying to get them to say exactly that. And the level of naivete, of thinking if you've got a seat at the table, you can negotiate with a tiger, it really is quite something. And the same with the NHI. The one thing that, and before I go on about this too long, the one thing that people must understand is something like ring-fenced government resources is a fiction. If you don't believe me, go look at Social Security in America. It was instituted as sort of this ring-fenced scheme, but then later, as government after government and judgment after judgment came out, it was all the more defined as a tax. So something that had originally been a dedicated or designated contribution from a citizen for a specific purpose just started going into the general revenue pool. There's no such thing as ring-fenced government spending. So whether it is laying siege or laying claim to your pension, your assets, your savings, your farm, your home, assets cannot be ring-fenced. Government seizing revenue or government things cannot be ring-fenced. It is all, if we're going to be terribly cynical and ideological about this, can be explained by the fact that here you have a governing party dependent on a patronage network or on full command of the economy, choose your poison. But what they can agree on is that resources are no longer there. either to drive the massive government spending required for a socialist economy, or to loot to the carcass has been picked dry by so many vultures over so many years. So the last option for this government, whether it's ideologically to spend the money on what they consider to be good policy, or whether they just want to pocket it, they need desperately to find new sources of assets. And that, ladies and gentlemen, is where you can look at NHI, EWC, possible nationalization of the Reserve Bank. If there's one thing they have in common, it is that it gives the state access to resources that people had been expecting would be protected.
Terence, final thoughts.
If I could just sweep in there, Herman said the resources are not there. I would like to use a homophone. For the government, I think they would look at you and say those resources are, or they would encourage people to say those resources are not theirs, in the sense that I've seen this many times, and I think I've said this on the show before, by people whose political orientation is actually not that far off from what the ANCs would be on paper, but you know, who have made a success out of their lives, who've built up businesses and whatever, who've provided for their old age, now look at this and say, you know, hands off my pension. What I think that it's important to bear in mind is that there are many people within the within the government and the ruling alliance who will look at those resources not as those are the resources of those who have accumulated them, but as a sort of social as a social good that should be benefiting society as a whole. You know, from there comes the idea that if we take your money and we put it into Eskom, we are helping to keep the lights on, and that's good for everybody. Even if you lose, you know, like you take a 20%, what is that lovely phrase from the asset manager, haircut on your investment. Now, when we see people from the medical aid industry saying this is absolutely impossible, you know, this money belongs to people. Well, yes. Although I would remind, you know, that industry that one of their leading lights said a little while ago, they would not, try and embark on their own vaccinations because we need social solidarity. You know, having positioned themselves within the ANC and the state's analysis, it becomes very difficult for them to say, well, you know, yes, of course we won't vaccinate people, and we might hand out a bit of money to do, to help fund it. But no, we're not going to hand you the 90 billion that we have in reserves. Well, why not? Social solidarity. That 90 billion will probably means a lot more healthcare than front loading every vaccination that a medical aid pays for, so that somebody else can get one as well. I think it's important to understand that that if you try and play on that pitch, you lose, and you lose badly, and you have already conceded many of the principles. Is this the moment of conversion?
Well, I seem to be very Churchillian in my theme, because there's this wonderful instance, and I've repeated it on the show many times, but I it bears repeating. Churchill was sitting next to a lady at dinner, and they weren't getting along, excuse me, and then he said to her, Madam, will you sleep with me for £1 million? And she said, well, £1 million, Mr. Churchill, I think I might. And a bit later, he said, just loud enough for other people to hear, Madam, will you sleep with me for £10? And the lady responded, Mr. Churchill, what kind of woman do you think I am? And his response was, well, I think we've already established that. We're just haggling over the price. And that's the problem with they're haggling over the price. That's what corporate South Africa is sort of doing. Once you grant the principle, you're just haggling over the price. And that's a very, very, very dangerous thing to do. And if I might add one tiny little thing, a colleague of ours has a father in finance, who gets very, very annoyed by me. I mean, that I'm quite used to. that I annoy people. I mean, that's nothing new. But I was very much involved with a prescribed assets campaign last year when we wanted to essentially take that policy off the table, and we did so successfully. And the other day I was speaking to this colleague, and he was telling me how much his father didn't particularly like me. And he said, you know, just don't tell Pretorius that because of his investment that we're investing in infrastructure, he will lose his mind. And I'm just like, no, I don't have a problem with people investing in things like infrastructure or public goods. But it matters who gets to decide. And that's at the heart of NHI, EWC, prescribed assets. Who gets to decide? And that's why Terence's point about it's not there, it's not theirs. I mean, that's absolutely the right point to make.
All right. Thank you very much, gentlemen. I think that is where we're going to close it today. If you want to support our fight for property rights and against expropriation without compensation, please become a friend of the Institute of Race Relations. And you can do that by going to our website, ir.org.za/join, and becoming a friend of the Institute. Anyway, thank you very much. We'll see you on Monday, and have a wonderful weekend, everyone.